Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Ultimate Voices Europe, the EUF's new diversity podcast, where we highlight backgrounds and perspectives that don't always get the spotlight.
That was Jakob. My name is Annika. We're both members of the EUF's Committee for Diversity, Equity and Inclusion, and we are excited to welcome our guest for this third episode of Ultimate Voices Europe, Maria Castillo. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Maria. Thanks for coming on. Would you like to introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us where you're joining from.
Hi. Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here. I'm from Mexico originally, but I live in Belgium. I've been living here for almost 5 years. So I'm joining from Brussels right now.
Nice. Welcome.
What brought you to Europe then? You said you were originally from Mexico. Is there any reason?
Well, I've been living in Europe for almost 10 years now. I came to study English. It was supposed to be only like 6 months, 1 year in Belgium. And then now it's 10 years after I'm still here. It was just for a year of exchange, but I really like it. And to be honest, I think it's part of the ultimate community that made me stay. So first I did my first year of English, then I stayed for a second one, for a third one. And then after I did my master in Spain, then I've been moving around. After Spain, I moved to Rotterdam for almost a year. Then I also was in UK, in Bath Spa, for another 6 months. And then after I moved to Brussels, I think around 2019, before COVID.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
Wow, lots of different places.
Yes.
For sure. And but you did start Ultimate in Mexico before you came to Europe?
Yes, I did start in Mexico. I started in 2007 and I was 17 years old when I started playing. I was supposed to take care of my little brother because he was just playing this weird sport. And then because they were always like in need of women, I was kind of obliged to play. To the date, I'm still playing and my brother, he just stopped playing.
Ah, no.
That's how it goes.
Yes.
I mean, yay that you're still playing. And then what kind of teams have you been playing for and what are you playing for? Like what's your Frisbee plans this season to kind of like wrap up the like full Frisbee talk?
Well, I think I have a kind of nice story because after almost 8 months after I started playing, I was invited to play with the Mexican national team. So it was not too long after I started. And I went to my first Worlds in 2008 with Mexico. And then after that, I just didn't want to stop playing. And then I just kept training. And I was training with two teams at the same time. I was training with a university team. And then I was going to pick up my brother. So I was training with his team as well. And then I was also in Mexico playing with a team in Mexico City and then with a team in San Luis Potosí. And then I was always trying to pick up with different teams. I think I've always been like that since I started. And I've always been invited to play with other teams as well.
That's so nice.
It's part of what made me who I am, because I think playing with other people is always good and helpful to grow and to be better and to learn from others. And then I also play a lot of open when I started. And my preference is to play mixed. It's always mixed. But since I joined JACA, I think I really, really enjoyed playing a women's high level with them. But it was still then that I really enjoyed and had pleasure of it. And then before that, I always play open. Actually, when I moved to Brussels, I was training with the Mooncatchers. And I was training with the open team because they didn't have a women's team. I was training open. And I really, really like it. I always enjoy it. But it's very hard. I think you have to do like a running and kind of cardio, not really playing. What else? Am I missing something? Or
so you've joined YAKA some years ago?
I joined YAKA in 2022 to go to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I did tryouts there. Yeah. Before that in Europe, I did not play too much competitive. I used to play with Gravity when I was living in Dublin. And then after that, when I moved to Spain, the level in Spain was not very high. And the team that I joined is called Discolaris. So it was kind of a... They were very fun and we play a lot of beach. But they were never really competing. And then I met some a Colombian guy that was playing in Portugal with Discover Lisboa. And he invited me to play nationals with them in Portugal. So I did that. And... we won, so I joined the first European kind of circuit that I did with them. And that was in 2018, I think, and we went to Poland with a mixed team. And it was very nice. Like, we did very well, as actually. And, yeah, but another random fact, the first time I played European nationals, it was with an Italian team. After, in 2012, after, no, 2014. After Lecco. So I stayed in Europe. I was not living in Europe, but I stayed in Europe for 3 months or something in Italy, just traveling. And then I joined a team to train. And also the same thing, I played regionals with them. And then we qualified to play the European Championship. But I honestly, I didn't know what it was. After I realized, oh, I already played one of those before. As well, just picking up with teams and getting invited to play with them. And I think
it's
part of what it fits. Yeah.
Nice. So that means you've seen your fair share of different teams and team cultures, and I guess also just cultures generally, both sort of throughout the world, but also within Europe. It seems like you've already been to a lot of places or played with a lot of teams. So I'm curious. I mean, you've already mentioned that sort of that makes you who you are in the sense of like having experienced many different settings and teammates and environments. I am curious if you have some sort of notion of is Europe very different to Mexico in the sense of the ultimate community and the way it feels to be part of that?
Oh, well, definitely, yeah, it's very different. But when I started playing in Mexico, it was already quite big. Like, we had nationals and we had different a national circuit as well, apart from nationals, and then we have regionals. So it was quite big when I started as well. But right now, I think they also change. I'm not really in... I don't really know how it works. But they changed the system. So I think they have less tournaments than they used to have before, which I think it's the main difference with Europe. You know, in Europe, you have a lot of tournaments all around the year. And then if you want, you don't stop playing. You play indoors, you play, like, you know, you go to Spain, you go to Italy, and there is always a tournament happening. So I think that's different. And then also in Mexico, what they were trying to do right now is to go and compete in the US a little bit more. But it's quite expensive, and and the level is very high. So they play sectionals, and they may be qualified for regionals, but they cannot go further. I think does that answer your question a little bit? Or?
I think in part, yes. I think I'm also curious about like sort of the vibe of teams or like the community. If do you notice any differences there?
I think. What I love from Frisbee is that everybody is always super welcoming. You know, everywhere you go, you have friends. Everywhere you go, you have family. I think that's also what helped me to integrate in society wherever I've been. You know, like in Ireland, it helped me to learn English faster than, for example, I have some classmates in a school, and they were not speaking English. And I noticed that my English was getting better and better just because I was with a Frisbee community, that they were just talking to me in English. And also, I think it happened the same here in Brussels. I learned French because of the team I was playing and because everybody was just talking to you in the language. And then you have friends, you have someone to maybe go and spend Christmas with, you know, if your family is not here, which is very nice. And I think in Mexico, it's very similar. Maybe, to be honest, we're a little bit warmer, I will say, and more open. Sometimes here in Europe, people, it's a little bit restricted. And then, you know, if they have friends, they don't need any more friends. So I did have experience that, okay, you are a teammate, but that's it, you know. There is no going to go further. There's always exceptions of people, of course. And then in Mexico, I think we are more like... we're Latin. I don't know how to explain it. You come and you're part of my family, and then you come and have dinner with my grandmother and with my cat, my dog, and everything. So that would be a little bit different.
That makes sense. Have you ever like experienced that as a challenge? That kind of like difference of Europe being a little bit colder, or has like ultimate still made it, I don't know, easier?
I think ultimate still make it easier. But yeah, there is some teams that were more harder to break. Like, for example, in Rotterdam, it was not very easy to get in. Like, yeah, we were go training and that was it. And then here in Brussels, for example, we do experience a lot the two different cultures within the Flemish and the French speakers. And that you can really notice how the Flemish speakers are a little bit more close than the French. And it's something that, for example, with Jaka didn't happen, because I think it's a very fun and open team. And as soon as you are part of the team, you are like welcome, even though with the language barrier, because not everybody speaks English there, but still, yeah, we managed to overcome that as a team.
Yeah, I guess maybe also in bigger cities, there's more like international players. That then if more people speak English, then even if you don't speak the language of the country, maybe you find more of a community faster when like in comparison to when it's a smaller city. Like, I mean, Rotterdam is still a big city, but I can imagine it being like a little bit of a smaller city. So like less expats, maybe, or less people from other places. So people like have their set families, their set friends, and it's harder to kind of integrate. I don't know
exactly that I think that's it.
I've also heard that a bit from friends who've like played with teams abroad, that it really matters, like it really makes a difference, sort of, as in, I mean, of course, like a big city means more expats, means that it's like more likely that there's already like expats playing in a team, and so they have maybe a culture established of like welcoming new people and stuff. I've also heard, for example, about like Mooncatchers, for example, that they are good at like welcoming new people. I mean, of course, because they have a lot of international players, but it's also I think a skill of a community or a club to develop that, to be welcoming.
They really developed that recently, because when I joined the team, it was very hard. For example, sometimes when you are good, people welcoming you.
Of course.
When you maybe are not, it's harder. But with the Mooncatchers, it didn't matter if you are good or not. It took a while to warm up being part of the team. But it's also a very big club. You know, there is a lot of members. So, yeah. And it's recent that they have a lot of international players, which is very nice.
Yeah, it's a really big program and it's getting even bigger. Speaking of Mooncatchers, you mentioned before that you played with the open team when you moved to Brussels, right? How was that experience as a woman matching player playing with like an open team at that level as well?
It was kind of hard and frustrating sometimes, but I think I was really grateful that they let me do that, because it was a huge opportunity for me to train, because I was not training with Jaka and I really wanted to prepare myself to go to Worlds. So yeah, having the chance to train with them, and that they are starting to involve more women, that they realize that they really needed to grow the women community in the team and to be more welcoming and less scary or less manly. I think it really helped me. Yeah, it really makes me feel good. And
Were you the only woman? Were you the only woman in the team, or like?
We were three, four. Yeah, not many. then allowed to train with the open team, we were two.
Yeah. Mm.
So they divide, I don't know if they're still doing like this, but they divide their groups in green, red, and blue. And for example, green is the beginners, blue, it's the mixed and the players that have been playing for so long, but they don't have the level to go to the red. And red are the best players that they have. Mm. And they divide the trainings in different days as well. So, for example, Monday, it's only the red. Wednesday, it's red and green. And then you join the trainings that you are allowed to join. And for example, at that moment, I was allowed to join the three trainings. I could go to the beginners, to the mixed blue, and to the red ones.
Nice.
Yeah, so it was nice. Very, very nice.
Mm. Okay, and I wonder, because so now you mentioned Mooncatchers and like the Belgian community, how was the Mexican community when you were still like an active part of it in terms of gender? How was it as a female matching player? And you mentioned you played mixed there.
Yes, we always missed women. There were never enough women. I remember like we were always very little, and it's always hard to. I think, I'm not sure if this is right, but maybe in Mexico, still the culture for women to practice sport is not very well seen. Or since you're very little, you are very criticized, you know, or like, oh, you run like a boy, or I see your underwear, ha ha ha, I'm laughing at you, you know, or things like that. So we are really, I don't know how to say, stopped to practice a sport or to do really. Yeah. Go and fight to play and to be a little bit more manly. I don't know how to say because we will get criticized, which is I think one of the worst mistakes that we can do, because then we want just to stay clean and sit and don't get sweaty. So
all the stereotypes.
Yeah, so I think that's why it's very hard sometimes to get women to practice sports.
Yeah.
And that's something that is that something that also made you enjoy the time in Europe, that was maybe a bit more progressive in that sense?
Just a quick note from the editing room. Listening back to this, I did not like the way this question came out and would like to add some additional thoughts. First of all, I think this notion that Europe is more progressive, for example, for women and like the image that women have in a society. While that in some factors is of course like true, when we look at like wages or opportunity to work and stuff like that, voting rights, there's a lot of things. However, it also has to be said that this is a very Eurocentric view on things. And that might have been good to also challenge or at least discuss together in this podcast. Would have been super interesting to hear Maria's thoughts on that. And while Maria personally might have found more women that are competing in sports like she is or like she wants to, I'm sure Europe provided other challenges for her that would have been interesting to explore. For example, life as a person of color in a predominantly white culture and white sports environment, and potential experiences with racism that, of course, can also happen in other cultures, but that is something that's part of like life in Europe. And that's just something I want to acknowledge. It didn't come up in the moment and isn't where the conversation went, which of course is fine, but I thought it was important to add to just not let this statement stand like this. That's it. Thanks.
Yes, but it's also a part of why I don't really like to play with women, maybe, if I can say that, because it's not strong enough, or because they don't go as you want them to go, and you're like, come on, but run, you know? Maybe I shouldn't say that already.
No, I think we all, like...
Sorry. Yeah, but it's a part of what I always said, it's because if I throw very far, she's not going to get there, you know, or... Yeah,
Yet you still play with Yaka and you really enjoy it. So like there's, I definitely.
I think it grew on me and I learned how to enjoy it. And I think the last 2 years, it's been a huge improvement in the women's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just any tournament you go, it doesn't matter who you are marking, she's going to be strong, you know. And then before, it was like you arrived to a tournament and then you knew who you were going to mark that was going to run. But this time it's almost unpredictable. I think if all the women are going to the gym, they're working to get strength, and that's very nice, and it's very challenging and scary.
I feel like the women's division has just become a lot more athletic, which has like made a huge difference. And like, I don't know, I feel like I've seen a shift since COVID maybe. So like 2022, like that was the start when it really like, I don't know, COVID obviously was a big hit on Ultimate, and I feel like also on Women's Ultimate. Anyways, like at least in Switzerland, I feel like a lot of people stopped or like had a family and things like that. But I feel like the people that stayed, like properly stayed, and everyone improved and every team kind of got stronger. I don't know. That's so I kind of share your sentiment of.
No, I agree. Yeah. It's a huge improvement, and it's very nice to see and to be part of it, you know, because, well, I've been going to the gym since, I don't know, 2010, 2012, like, and you notice how people were not doing it. So it was different. And
I'm super curious about, because I feel like in the US, it's been like way more normalized, right? For women sort of in the top level teams to like be athletic and go to the gym and stuff. And now with sort of the women's scene in Europe stepping up, I'm super curious how that's going to look next year at Club Worlds, because I think I'm just very excited to see the difference from 4 years ago.
For sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're catching up, I think, hopefully.
Let's see. Okay. Well, Maria, I'm also curious, not having mentioned the US. I think you've played for Sukkot Super Team, for example, last year.
Yes.
And with some American players as well. And from the sounds of it, you're a pretty competitive person as well. So have you ever considered going to the US to play Frisbee there?
I did. I considered and I've got invitations, but I haven't been able to. I think that if I go to the US, it means I need to quit to my season in Europe.
Mm.
And I think I really like to play here. Yeah. And right now, I think I'm a little bit past the age, I think, to go and do it maybe. So it was kind of a little dream. I did play sectionals and I did play a US Open. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Okay. But you're at peace with that.
I think I am in peace. Yeah.
That's nice.
Maybe I could. Yeah. I sometimes am saying, yeah, I should just try it. But I don't know.
I see. All right. Well, I've also been wondering, because we've also not talking about playing in the US and stuff. We've had Levka, of course, here in the first episode, and we discussed a lot sort of the visibility of women matching players in Europe and in the US, and how in the US, of course, generally Ultimate has a bigger visibility. And of course, also in Europe, there's a growing visibility for Ultimate generally, but I also think for Women's Ultimate. And I've also been curious to hear your perspective on that, sort of how do you perceive that as a woman in the European scene, with, I don't know, the rise of social media and highlight videos and commentary, like more articles being written, people knowing your name, etc. How has that been for you in the past years?
I think that's a very funny question, because I'm not really sure I like it. I think before I like it to be unknown, you know. Mm-hmm. You just arrived to feel that no one knew who you were, and then you just boom, 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 and yes.
Secret
and
weapon.
Now it's yeah, sometimes I think it puts a little bit of pressure on yourself.
Fair, yeah.
Strong and don't let go and keep training, and you need to do well, and then you need to don't make mistakes. And yes, it's, I think it's a little
pressure
for me. I would say
that makes sense. Like more visibility also means more pressure and more expectation, maybe like from you and also from yourself, I could imagine.
Yeah. And I think people also start, I'm not sure, to perform different.
Mm-hmm.
Where they play a match which has visibility and where it's a match without visibility. So
yeah, fair.
I think it's
That's a good point.
I'm not going to complain because I think it's very nice as well that everybody's knowing the frisbee, and then sometimes you have your reel, and then you are in the in the video, so it's very nice. But
yeah, that's a good point. Like kind of like I don't know, like streamed games maybe shifting for like highlight plays, or like people looking to like make that highlight play, for example, things like that. That I could imagine, like that kind of like being. Having some truth, yeah.
Yeah, I also, I talked with some girls, and before they used to get very nervous, you know. Oh, I don't really want to play, like, we're going to be streamed, everybody's going to see. And then I also have other friends that are very happy because their family is watching, and then you see all just that the mom said, oh, I see you running, you're so fast. It's so cute. So it has both things, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, talking about maybe games with sort of a big outreach, you've also been part of the EUF Diversity Showcase game, right, in Limerick 3 years ago, 2 years ago. Maybe can you tell us a little bit about that and how that was for you?
Well, it went a little bit fast, and I think I was a little bit late to the game. Yeah, because we were playing a game that was not ending. So to be honest, it was hard to play that game because we were exhausted. So more game on top of all the games you were playing. But in terms of visibility and to know, it was more about knowing the people that was in my team that I've never seen other teams, and I know they are not from here. So that was very nice in terms of community and to see and to, I don't know, play with Nasser or with Tiff. Yes, and then sometimes, like, yeah, you met someone else new.
Yeah, that's really, like, nice here that it wasn't only just about, like, the visibility, but also the community of of players on the field,
Yeah, I've heard that from multiple people. I think that was actually the more important aspect of it, the connecting part rather than the showing off, sort of. Well, would you... I don't know. Do you think it was a cool idea to do that? Like, do you think it would be worth it to have things like this happen again? Or do you think necessary? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think it already happened as well at Worlds in Cincinnati as well. It was at the first game.
Yeah, true.
So, yeah, it was very nice. Yeah.
Did you play there?
No, I didn't. I was invited, but I couldn't make it either. I had COVID.
The COVID year.
Yes.
With Yaka, you had a lot of cases, right?
We were two, Rust and me. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Two big names, though.
Yeah, true. But yeah, it's noted in that case, like on the, because like since Jakob and I are both in the diversity committee, it's definitely something we can take on and try to make it happen again, a showcase game in one way or another. Cool.
Yeah. Speaking maybe of, try to have a timing better than like Thursday of the European Championships.
Yeah. Very true.
Just the timing, or maybe a little bit more of. I think we didn't hang out that much. We didn't really have time to hang out either, or the weather was too bad.
Limerick.
To get to know better the other people will be nicer.
Yeah, that's a good point. We can definitely take on. Yeah. Yeah, speaking of the committee, Jakob and I are both on the Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Committee. We kind of asked you to bring a question for us before this podcast. Do you want to ask it now?
Yes, sure. I have two questions. One is, what does a truly inclusive and diverse Europe Ultimate community look like to you in like 5-10 years?
That's a good question. Annika, you want to start or should I start?
I think I need a minute to think.
Okay. Then I'll start. Paul. Well, I think first of all, like ultimate, of course, is like a very specific, I would say, population, right? That's not really representative of the general population, and I think that's the case in Europe, as in Mexico probably, or the US or anywhere else. So in that sense, of course, I think every subpopulation that you have will not be a perfect representation, right? But I do think you can take steps towards that sort of to make it be a better representation. And I think that sort of has multiple factors. One thing we've already mentioned that in previous episodes as well, of course, is like costs and money. And that's probably the biggest one as well. But also the hardest one to solve, because sort of if we had more money in Ultimate, there's lots of things we could do, right? And everybody kind of wants that. So I think for that, like the sport just needs to grow and attract more people, and then like more resources also to be more inclusive to people who can't right now afford going to like international tournaments and buying equipment and all that stuff. I think that's the biggest part. I would also say, however, that I think it would be lovely for the Ultimate community to not just be a representation of like the general population, but also to be like a utopia in a sense. So a better version. And I think in some ways it is, right? I think Spirit of the Game is a perfect example of like creating a little utopia in a community, and like sort of the way we treat each other on and off the field, and the way people communicate in like conflicts and stuff. I think for me, that is something like utopian and something that would be super nice to transfer to the rest of like to the real world more, yes. I would say. So I think there's like two things, right? So like, I think the Ultimate community should become more like the general population in one sense, but also keep its spirit, literally spirit in that sense, and maybe be an example of like positive change. So now I'm thinking, of course, about like gender issues, for example, and like trans inclusivity, mm-hmm. Where Europe is really, or the world is really headed in a very different direction than the Ultimate community is right now. And maybe the Ultimate community in that sense can also serve as a beacon, sort of. I think that would be my hope.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Damn, Jakob, you already said so many things. love it. I think I was also thinking about like what the Ultimate community looks like right now. And we are still a very white sport, a very rich sport, an academic sport as well. Mm. And I think to kind of like have more diversity there, but yeah, diversity isn't enough. And you asked the right question, like, how can we be more inclusive, right? And that is like kind of breaking the barriers of cost and also of like, yeah, being open, and like every team being open to new players, and to kind of also maybe reach out in different places and not just that one school that you always kind of like have an in because you have a teacher there, but like go to different districts, maybe districts where there's more, I don't know, immigrants, or like, I don't know, just to kind of try get as many people to play as you can, and then also make sure that we have the structures that people can stay in the sport. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to highlight what you already said, Jakob, of like the way we treat each other in Ultimate mostly is really nice, and like with Spirit of the Game and everything. And I think to like be truly inclusive, we can still even do better in a way, because there's still comments you hear, there's still like little things like microaggressions against, I don't know, players of color or women or queer people that are might maybe small and very like little in comparison to maybe other sports that where people, I don't know, receive more hate. But I think still comments like, I don't know, mixed is open with obstacles or whatever, like such comments still exist and hurt our sport.
Yeah, I agree. Just because I'm curious, Maria, can I ask you the question back? What would that look like for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's hard to answer. I think that maybe making Ultimate Frisbee more approachable for more people, for more cultures, for more immigrants here in Europe. I think that could really help a lot. Mm. I think that Frisbee community shows every time that we are open and that we are helpful and that we are friends. to say it like that. So I think that, yeah, just open it to more people. Try to make it arrive further. Yeah.
That would be nice.
You were also so good, short and concise with the answer. Very nice. Maybe we can be better in answering your second question.
Yes, second question. I'm not sure if the second question is good. So I was thinking that being a skilled player has opened doors for me, for sure, a lot. But it's also made me reflect, like, what about the talented players that didn't have the same luck that I did? Players that that didn't got seen yet. So how can we come to them, or how they can come to us to give them the opportunity also to be part of the community?
I think that's a tough question.
I don't know. I think whenever I talk to people about sports, I don't know, fairness always comes up at some point. And I think like a really shit thing about our sport is that like our conditions are never fully fair. And it always also has to do with luck and like who sees you play and who invites you onto the next team and like what opportunities you have to play. Do you already live, I don't know, in a city that has a really good team that can like push you and make you better? Or do you live in a city that barely has three women, for example, now as a woman matching player to play and then to kind of like, so it's a really hard question to answer because I think a lot of it has to do with luck. Not only, I feel like if you work hard, you also can make it somewhere. But I feel like there is a lot of skilled players that maybe just don't get the same media attention as others. There's, I don't know, Kayla Helton sometimes always comes to my mind. I know she's a US player, but she's been on like almost every US team and she's a big name, but she's still not as big of a name as a lot of other players in the US who have played for less time and things like that. So there's just players that don't go as noticed as other players. And I don't really fully have an answer except for there has to be talent, but there's also luck. I don't know. That makes sense.
And I do think like, and maybe that's in ultimate not so big yet, but I think it's starting already where like marketability is also like a thing. So as media coverage like increase, I think like in other sports you can really see it how like being good sort of is already the most important factor in like your social status and how much like coverage you get and how much attention you get and stuff. But then there's other things like marketability, like charisma. I don't know, kind of, are you capable of sort of being the face of a team or of a league or something like that? And then I guess there's luck. But I guess in my opinion, there's also other factors. And then, for example, coming back to like gender, for example, like what women get like coverage and a lot of space is, for example, I think, again, much more determined by how much do they fit like stereotypes of, I don't know, being pretty or being sort of feminine or white, I think, in many cases. Like, so I think as we get deeper and deeper, sort of, there's again the same structures that are all around us, sort of, I think. And I think that's also visible in that kind of visibility part. But yeah, I guess like, is there a team in the city that you grew up in or not? That's just based on luck, I guess.
Yeah, no, but you're so right. There's definitely a lot of other factors that have to do with the way our society wants, like what our society still like produces in media and in, visibility.
Because as well, you can be good and then go and do a tryout to a team, but if no one knows you, they don't know your name, then maybe you're not going to get picked. And I think things like that can happen. Or maybe now we have Ultimate Central and all this that you can pop up to a tournament. And as a woman, maybe sometimes it's easier to say, oh, I want to play a tournament, or a team is looking for a woman to play a tournament. But I think as a man, it could be a little bit harder as well to get into a team or to, to reach.
For sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want this to be, and I don't know yet if it's relevant, but I think there's also like a funny thing is like, as you get better as a player, you get more like welcomed. I think you said this before, Maria, that like you move to a new city and people already kind of know you, who you are. They immediately want you on your team and things like that. And I don't know, that's also like an interesting development in Frisbee. And I think it's always kind of been like that and it'll stay. But sometimes, I don't know, I have discussion with friends who are like, I don't know, is it fair to then like have friends quicker just because you're good? It's just a thought I've had from like all of the like visibility talk.
I'm going to say this, but it's something to be as well with the super team and what happens, you know, if you're good or you have a lot of highlights or something, then you're in. But if not, I think there's a lot of people that could be also in. Or for me, that team will be fair if every time they make a new team, they will give more opportunity to other people instead of shifting people out. I don't know.
Mm.
I think, yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense. A fully new team, you mean?
A fully new team every time. Yeah. It will give a lot of opportunity to people to get visibility or to play together. And because it's great, you know, you play with people that you never will play in your life. You know, it's amazing. Yeah, but if it's all the same people all the time, for me, I think they are destroying teams as well, because then the people is not competing with their teams. And then you are making a team that it's also boring to play with, because you only win against everybody, you know? Yes.
Well, I agree with you. I think I think it's a sick like project, but I think it for sure has its downsides. And maybe also touching on what Annika, what you just said before, like that's also something I think about like really a lot. Is that, and I think that's the case in every sport or like actually anything where people like strive to be good at, that social status is so closely tied to like, I guess, your functionality sort of. And if you're a good player, you have like high functionality to a team, and then you're worth a lot like as a person. And I think in part that's just how like life works. And we can't really change that. But I am sometimes, I don't know, it's just like sometimes I'm at a Frisbee party and I'm like, it's just so clearly like, it's just a psychologist in me, but like you see sort of just from the way people move around in a room, you can just tell without ever having seen anyone play like who the good players are. And that's, so and that's like not their fault, right? Like they're just doing their best and also, living their life.
That's also that happens in Ultimate a lot, that sometimes someone that you will never believe is good, it's amazing. You know,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it's connected with like being marketed and like, oh, do the announcers know these three names of the team? And then these names are being said. Like I've played on Hood like for a couple of years, and all those all the people on Hood, like Floor, Ben, Lola, Vault, like who get mentioned a lot, they deserve every moment of it, like for real. Yeah, they're insane players. But it was a thing in that team that there's like a lot of good players who don't, and that's something like to work around with, like as a social sort of structure in the team. And I'm sure that's the case in every like good team with good players. Yeah,
I think there is a space for everyone. That's it.
For sure. And I think that's also like, that was one of the main ideas why we started this podcast, actually, is that I thought to myself, like, oh, there's much more to tell, like, about Frisbee or, like, the people in the Frisbee community than just the couple of names that you always hear. Now, I have to admit, we are also inviting we are inviting people who are, like, kind of known to, like, start this project. But I think it's a start to, like, try to tell different stories. And then we're also going to have less well-known guests in over time for sure.
Yeah, I think it's also like a, I don't know, means to kind of get people to listen to different stories. And again, we also use this marketability of people and like invite good people and people who have a lot of visibility onto our podcast because that means people will start to listen more likely. And then we hopefully kind of like also touch stories that people have never heard. And we also hear you guys' stories like that people have never heard, which is also nice.
I think sure. It's nice.
All right. Thank you for the great questions.
That was very good questions. We also asked you, I think, did we? We also asked you to tell us about a like role model that you have, or like an idol or something that inspires you, someone, something, a project, whatever, that inspires you within Frisbee. Have you thought of something?
What inspires me in Frisbee?
Could also be like a person or a team or group or something that was like important sort of in your way of in finding your place in the, I don't know, the European community, for example, or...
Well, I think I always got inspired by Groot, to be honest.
Nice.
They were always very inspiring and very strong. And last Dom Storni that we played the final against them, it was just so firing. Like, they were so aggressive, but in a good way, you know, like...
Mm. Just to clarify, you're just talking about the women's team or the mixed team? Just the women's team this season, you mean?
When I arrived to Europe, it was a mixed team because the women's team, it was not there. But you always saw like this family or kids playing together, and they were so young and they were so good. And when I moved to Rotterdam, I tried to go and play with them. And actually, I was very disappointed that they didn't train together. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was like, yes, I'm going to be able to join a team, you know, or to try to join a team. And it was sad, but every time to watch them play in Whitmill, the final, and see how the women threw the hammers and how they lit the game, I think was very impressive. Because for me, it was a mixed team that was lit by women.
100%.
It was always what I really, really enjoyed watching.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds good.
I feel like that's a great answer. I asked because I feel like I also always like saw the mixed team already as like a like great team to watch because it was the women that were like leading on the pitch.
Yes.
And
we're dominating.
And now dominating for sure. For sure. And now also all of those players and more dominating in the women's division. Are also really cool to watch.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, then I'm just going to sort of follow up on what you said, Maria, about the Groot women's team, because what you just said, like it sparked this notion of me, and I think I had this also when I first joined them, is I was in a lot of like awe about sort of the women in that team in how sort of freely competitive they are, in a sense of that, like, feel like... I think it touches a bit what you said earlier, that like female socialized people sometimes, or like there's women's teams, like you can really see a difference in sort of the how they act on the field compared to open teams, for example. And then there's like positive and negative sides to that, right? And I think sometimes when you hear a big crowd like of very loud like screaming and stuff, and you're like, ah, of course, this is an open team. but there's two sides to it, right? And I think sort of in women's sports, sort of allowing more, I don't know, emotions or sort of also a sense of aggressiveness, assertiveness, stuff like that, that isn't like stereotypically how women are supposed to sort of behave. I think that's something cool to see that sort of break free a little bit in sports. And I think also something that Groot really sort of encompasses or like embodies. So that's cool. Annika?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's nice. I feel like that's also part of what is changing in Europe. Like, I feel like Groot is really like leading this, but I feel like women's teams are like getting louder and like allowed to show their aggressiveness in a positive way on the field. Like to have that, I don't know, we always say tiger mode, but to like fully like show the like positive aggressiveness of sports. Which is on the pitch, but also off the pitch, and like coming together, being loud, which is cool to see. And without it, hopefully, like I feel like sometimes in men teams, I feel like it's sometimes a little bit of a hetero-gorilla vibe as well.
Sure. And I think
which is what I think you mentioned is also the downside of like these loud groups.
But which also gets more, I think. Like,
yeah, true.
I think as Ultimate becomes like more popular or also more mainstream, I think just sort of you can see it in like terms of spiking and sort of aggressiveness in bids or in plays or in, and some of that is just increased. Yeah, exactly. Like increased competitiveness, which is good, I guess, but there's like a very fine line.
With the spirit of the game, I think, to stop being spirited, you know? Yeah.
But I also appreciate the shift of like spirit of the game doesn't have to be, especially in women's, doesn't have to be only all smiles and 50,000 high fives.
It's a wrong perception of the spirit of the game.
Exactly. Yeah. It's we are allowed to be aggressive and loud and still be spirited, which I think now there's this like shift of people. Yeah. Seeing that too.
And I think on that note, we could say, and having been part of Rut, I also experienced that myself. I think part of this like drive and sort of, let's call it like healthy aggressiveness, is also like having a strong sideline, like shouting each other at each other, being super loud, being like heard, taking space, and that the men and the women do that. I think, however, this is a very fine line, and it also has to be said that like this line has been crossed at times. And I think it was also noticeable last year with Rut Open, like, and that's not the only Open team. I think it's a more common thing of like Open teams supporting their women's teams loudly, which is of course nice and can be super fun also. Like there have been super fun sort of hooligan battles between like Rut Open and Wall City in like, for example, the Windmill Final of Jinx and Rut Women. But then like, lines can be crossed and yeah, like it can be intimidating. And when we're shouting out Rut for this aggressiveness, there also is something else that needs to be mentioned. And that is that the Rut members, specifically men from the Open team, have crossed the line here at times. And it's one thing to be a bit over the top and loud and annoying. And another thing to like say slurs and practice hate speech, and that is just flat out not okay and needs to be said here. And this is something that happened as recently as Tom Cerny this year, where like really discriminatory language was used, and that's not just making people comfortable, that's actually like a violent act in my perspective. And yeah, sort of from an EUF side, I think it also needs to be said, the EUF needs to at least in part take responsibility that stuff like this doesn't happen at their tournaments. Now, Tom's Tourney was not an official EUF tournament, but it is part of the EUCS. So I think it's important for tournaments to have like guidelines and stuff, especially like, for example, with like the trans policies at tournaments being like very welcoming, that you also need to like make sure that trans people, trans athletes are protected if they do like partake according to the policies that are there. So that is something that we as the DEI committee are also going to take with us for the future, and see maybe that the UF will have something like a code of conduct with possible sanctions to actors who fail to comply with that code of conduct. And then stuff like hate speech and discriminatory language will be part of that. And yeah, like there's a lot of good sides to this kind of aggressiveness. But it's also sad that it often comes with like a very destructive part, and it's of course hard to like have one and not the other, but I think that's what we should be aiming for and the standard we should hold ourselves to in Ultimate for sure. And I know personally that Rut is behind this incident and like is trying to address it internally. Like the whole club sort of in terms of its values doesn't stand for this, and I'm proud to say that this has started a process. I will also be giving a workshop with the Open team, like on hate speech, on language, on like sensibility. And together we're going to start a process for the club to like start drafting its own code of conduct and to make sure that the club Rut sort of itself is equipped to hold its members accountable for their behavior, which of course is like good. This is how you're supposed to deal with this kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, ideally it doesn't happen in the first place, and there can be like a healthy aggressiveness without that happening. And I think it's just super important to be able to have a dialogue about this kind of stuff as well.
Well, I think that what happens in Ultimate is that you can always discuss, you know, if you can just have a discussion about it. And if you are not agreeing with that, then yeah, just express your opinion. But I do agree that sometimes the open teams cheering in the sideline for the women's team, it's intimidating. And I think I had few occasions where the boys are not taking care of the other team.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in the sideline and they just step on you, or they don't let you go, or and that's not very nice. Yeah,
of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a fine balance of like positive support and being loud for your women's team, but also like being mindful of the other team.
For sure.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think like the beauty of sport, right? To walk that line.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Maria, for coming on. It was lovely talking to you and hearing your thoughts and experiences.
Thank you very much as well for inviting me. It was a very nice conversation.
You're very welcome. And see you around soon.
See you around, yeah.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Nice.